On the eve of the election, the State Personnel Board releases their Troopergate report on Governor Sarah Palin. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 3rd of November. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, new revelations about one of the Stevens jurors.
Now we find out a juror lied, and probably lied in terms of being qualified to be a juror from what we understand now.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Northern Air Cargo, with scheduled flights to 16 destinations throughout Alaska every week. Northern Air Cargo, building strong relationships with the communities they serve.
The investigator for the State Personnel Board has found there is, quote, no probable cause to believe Governor Palin did anything unlawful in firing former Public Safety Commissioner Walt Monahan. APRN's Dave Donaldson was at the press conference this afternoon where the report was released and joins us now. Hi, Dave.
Good afternoon.
Dave, what specifically does the report find?
It finds that neither the governor nor anybody else within state government, within her staff, did anything to violate the Alaska Ethics Act. Several points of the matter, but it all comes down to she did not violate it by firing Monahan. She had a complete right to do that. She did not violate the Ethics Act with anything concerning Trooper Michael Wooten, her former brother-in-law that she was dissatisfied with, that there's no reason for anything to go to any further law enforcement agency because she did not commit any interference with official proceedings or official misconduct. Nobody within the administration did anything, and that the entire complaint should be dismissed.
Did the investigator address the timing of the report's release?
Yeah, he was asked about this, and he said, you know, it was one of those things that he wanted it done right. He wanted it done as soon as possible, and ideally, and even politically, considering that that's the that's really the issue there, coming out the day before the national elections, was it timed to affect that? He says that it would have been better if he had gotten it, or had been more politically helpful if he had gotten the report out last week, which is his original goal to try to get it finished. He said he simply could not get the work done by then, and he was actually working until midnight last night in preparation for the this morning's meeting of the personnel board to approve releasing it. He said it was the goal was to get it out as quickly as possible, and he missed one that would have gotten it out even quicker.
So, Dave, how much does this report conflict with the Legislative Council's report on the same matter released last month? Do they agree on anything?
They do agree that the governor does, in fact, have the right to fire the commissioner. That's about the extent of it. Beyond that, it is Tim Patuminas, the independent counsel who did the report, is working for the personnel board, said that basically it is a simple matter of interpretation of the law, that he thinks that there was not a correct interpretation of the Legislative Council report. It also says that there were some basic tenets of, you know, just the way the investigation was conducted. For example, the Legislative Council report did not have all the evidence. It did not talk to or include in its report all the information that was that would have supported or not supported some of the arguments that were made in drawing the conclusions that the governor had abused the right. And then the basic difference was that that the legislature found that the governor did not try to stop the pressure on Commissioner Monahan for firing Trooper Wooten. Patuminas is saying that the legislature did not interview the governor, did not ask her about it. He did, and she says she didn't know it was all going on. She was totally unaware of it, and that there is simply no corroborating evidence to support the findings of the Legislative Council. Basically, there was nothing to go on except one person making a statement, and that statement was actually denied as having been made.
All right, Dave, thanks for following that.
My pleasure.
APRN's Dave Donaldson reporting from downtown Anchorage. ¶¶ A juror who disappeared from Senator Ted Stevens' federal trial admitted today that she lied to the court about why she left town suddenly during deliberations. The juror's father did not die. Instead, the woman flew to California to attend a horse race. APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington.
The woman, known initially only as juror number 4 and now known to be 52-year-old Marion Hennett, was summoned to the courthouse today where the Stevens trial took place. Judge Emmett Sullivan wanted her to explain why, during deliberations, she disappeared from D.C. and then wouldn't return the court's phone calls. Hennett had told the court she had to go to her father's funeral, but today her lawyer, public defender A.J. Kramer, said that wasn't true. Her father did not die. Kramer said his client was of the state of mind that she had to go to California, and the story popped into her mind as an excuse. In reality, she had plane tickets to go to the Breeders' Cup at the Santa Anita racetrack and didn't want to miss it. Then, in a turn towards the bazaar, Hennett interrupted and spoke on her own behalf and told the judge a confusing story about the horse racing industry, drugs, and wiretaps. Her rambling comments didn't make sense, and the judge cut her off, saying he accepted that she was not able to deliberate for reasons serious to her. Judge Sullivan said he was glad she was fine. Hennett's absence during deliberations last month forced the trial to halt for a day as the judge waited for her to return to Washington. Then, when she could not be contacted last week, the judge replaced her with an alternate. Hours later, the jury returned its verdict, finding Senator Stevens guilty on all counts. Today, after Hennett made her strange comments, the judge said what he'd heard reinforces the correctness of the court's decision to replace her. But Stevens' lawyers said they didn't necessarily agree with the court's findings. Reporters followed Hennett out of the courthouse, where she continued with her rambling story about wiretaps and drugs. Reporters wanted to know whether Hennett would have found Stevens guilty. She said yes, she would have, and followed that up by saying she thought all politicians were guilty. Hennett eventually said she would have voted to convict Stevens. She made her way to the subway, and reporters let her go, but Stevens' lawyers kept following her as she passed through the turnstile. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Senator Ted Stevens says his attorneys found the juror's bizarre behavior confusing this morning in the D.C. court.
It's sort of, you know, a strange thing. We now know that the prosecutors lied and filed forced false testimony. Now we find out a juror lied and probably lied in terms of being qualified to be a juror from what we understand now. But that's the judge has just said to go home. She's sort of sounds like she might be not really altogether.
Stevens acknowledges the jury's verdict, but he contends he is not truly convicted until he has exhausted his legal appeals and the judge signs off on a sentence. Stevens' Democratic challenger, Anchorage Mayor Mark Begich, says the bottom line is Stevens had his day in court and was found guilty.
And it was a very fair trial. The judge even made every effort to make sure he was well, you know, it was a fair trial in the system. But at the end of the day, he was convicted unanimously by a jury on 7 counts.
The day before the election that is so important to them, both men say they are most concerned about citizens making sure they get out and vote. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Native leaders work to encourage a strong election turnout.
We registered people who had never voted before, including elders. That was a surprise.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by
Grant Station, finding grants for nonprofit organizations, schools, and governmental agencies throughout the U.S. and Canada. Grant Station, fast track to funding. On the web at grantstation.com.
Alaska is on its way to a huge voter turnout for tomorrow's general election. That's if the people voting early and casting absentee ballots are any indication. Gail Fanumiai is director of the Elections Division.
Statewide, we have voted over 20,000 people who've voted early through last night, and we have over 30,000 other forms of absentee voting ballots returned from voters at this point in time.
The 50,000 people who have already cast their ballots equal about 20% of the total number of people who voted in 2006 and about 15% of the voters in the 2004 presidential election. Funumiai says that indicates there's a lot of interest in the election, and she expects a very large turnout tomorrow. She says it could take a lot of time to count the ballots correctly and even longer to determine the outcome of some races.
And that happens every year. I mean, on election day, there's still a lot of people voting absentee in person, and by mail ballots still have up to 10 days to be received if postmarked within the U.S. and 15 days if postmarked outside the U.S. And then, of course, you need to account for the thousands and thousands of question ballots that will also be voted on election day as well.
Funumiai says people have two ways to find out where to vote tomorrow. They can call 888-383-8683. That's 383-VOTE. People in Anchorage can call 269-VOTE, or they can link to an online poll finder from the division's website at elections.alaska.gov. Alaska Natives are also working to get Natives to the polls. Executive Director of the Association of ANCSA Corporation Presidents, Vicky Oddy, says for the past month, she and others have been working to get people registered. She says a recent registration drive at the Alaska Native Medical Center was a big success.
In one day, we registered 300 people. We registered people who had never voted before, including elders. That was a surprise.
Oddy says they have volunteers in communities across the state that are willing to take people to the polls to vote. She says they even made arrangements for people who are currently in the hospital to have a chance to cast their ballot through a special Division of Elections form.
And those are being actually emailed over to the hospital and will be handed out on the food trays of all the patients. And then once those are filled out, we then will have volunteers pick them up, run them over to Division of Elections, get the ballots, take them back to the hospital so the patients can vote.
A toll-free number has been set up to answer questions about voting, where your polling place is located, and to report any problems encountered while voting. That number is 1-866-OUR-VOTE or 1-866-687-8683. In Anchorage's Senate District K, the Democrat incumbent Betty Davis finds herself fending off a determined campaign by Republican Dave Harbor. KSKA's Len Anderson reports on this East Side race.
Their political philosophies present a clear difference for voters in Senate District K. On KSKA's Running, Republican Dave Harbor described his view of Alaska's largest public challenge.
We have a great opportunity ahead if we make the right decisions. If we don't let the pioneering state become the entitlement state.
On the same program, Democrat Betty Davis voiced her major focus.
At this time, education is still my passion.
Davis is seeking her third Senate term. Besides her Senate stint, which began in 2000, she spent three terms in the House. She also served on the Anchorage School Board. Her professional background has played a dominant role in her legislative goals.
I'm a nurse social worker by profession, and I served 20 years working for the state of Alaska, helping families meet the needs that they need to have met, and children to keep them in school, and to make sure that they were cared for well.
Harbor's public service lists chairman of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, Alaska Council on Economic Education, and the Hugh O'Brien Youth Foundation, Alaska. He assisted in the founding of the Saturday Market and the Anchorage Downtown Partnership. He's worked in public and government relations for the Arctic Gas Consortium and Atlantic Richfield Company. In 2003, Governor Murkowski appointed Harbor to the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. When he speaks of youth, Harbor often describes future economic needs.
The problem is that too many politicians' decisions have selfishly benefited only the current generation of Alaska voters. It's hard to restrain spending and taxes to make sure our kids and grandkids have the kind of economy that we inherited.
Anchorage's Senate District K includes Airport Heights and South Mountain View, Russian Jack, College Gate, the University and Medical Areas, Baxter, Chester Valley, the Chugach Foothills, Reflection Lake, and Scenic Park. For KSKA, this is Len Anderson.
When State Senator Lyda Green announced earlier this year that she was choosing not to run for another term, Republican challenger Linda Menard won the Republican candidacy for Senate District G by default. Now the outcome of the race for District G is a toss-up. Menard declined to be interviewed for this report, but newcomer Democrat Eric Cordero is challenging the former Matanuska Susitna Borough School Board member for the seat. APRN's Ellen Lockyer reports.
Palmer resident Eric Cordero has lived in the Matanuska Valley for the past 7 years. He has a wife, two children, a degree in political science, and a background in public service.
I'm also involved with Rotary. I'm the past president of the Palmer Rotary Club.
He commutes, along with most valley workers, to Anchorage, where he manages the nonprofit Alaska Legal Services Corporation, which provides pro bono services for low-income people like seniors and domestic violence victims. And he co-founded and chaired the Hispanic Affairs Council, although he says he's not claiming distinction as the Hispanic candidate. Cordero is worried about political corruption in Juneau.
Over the years, you could see that there's been less and less people going out to vote or less people interested in being civically engaged. And I think that that's part of losing that faith in the public process. But I think what we need to do is make sure that that culture, you know, doesn't expand or it doesn't become a permanent part of the culture in Juneau. And the sad thing is that people are already thinking that Juneau and corruption is the same. And that's a problem.
He lists energy as one of the valley's top voter concerns.
There are approximately between 11,000 to 14,000 people in Matsu that drive to Anchorage for work. That's a huge percentage of the population. And lately, with the gasoline prices and food prices and everything going up, people are making tough choices. And some people are actually quitting their jobs in Anchorage for a lower-paying job without benefits in Matsu because they can't afford getting to work. They would have to sacrifice other basic needs.
Republican Linda Menard has name recognition, being married to Matanuska Susitna Borough Mayor Kurt Menard. She founded the first Matsu School Foundation and was the first president of the Matsu Health Foundation. Menard has a 12-year background on the borough school board and currently serves on the Matsu Hospital Board. Concern for senior citizens is one thing she has in common with Cordero.
And I would like to see an opportunity where maybe we can sit around the table and look at the longevity bonus plan again. So that would be one area that I would be interested in looking at. And I think we have desensitized ourselves towards our seniors, and I would like to work on that.
Menard has a long history in community service. And she says one thing legislators have to take into consideration is spending.
You know, of course, everything comes down to what fiscally we are going to be able to spend on those programs.
Menard's comments were made on the public television show Running. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The Division of Elections reminds voters that Tuesday, November 4th, is Election Day. Polling places will be open from 7 a.m. until 8 p.m. To find your polling place, call 1-888-383-8683. If you need language or other assistance while voting, you may ask the election board or bring a person of your choice to assist you. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska Division of Elections.
One of the more hotly contested Fairbanks area state legislative races is in House District 7. As Dan Bross reports from member station KUAC in Fairbanks, the contest features incumbent Republican Mike Kelly against political newcomer Democrat Carl Castle.
Mike Kelly has a reputation for expressing his conservative views in no-nonsense, sometimes politically blunt words. His comments during a committee meeting on a domestic violence bill last session, which included accusing women of shacking up with abusive men, generated negative feedback.
I said that the men of Alaska had to do a better job of protecting the women of Alaska, and that women, for their part, had to stop making what I said at the time, stupid decisions. I probably should have said better choices, but you get the point.
Kelly, who later apologized for his remarks, says his heart is in the right place.
You know, my passion is definitely in the right spot. I'm a protector of women, children. I'm a protector of life from from the womb to the tomb.
Kelly drew public ire again this summer for demeaning comments related to the energy relief proposals being considered during a special legislative session. His opponent in the election, political newcomer Democrat Carl Castle, says Kelly, who ultimately voted for energy relief, was out of touch with people on the issue.
He spoke very strongly against all the options for energy assistance, all those programs, and called them welfare and morphine. And I think that that quote, the welfare and morphine quote, upset me. I thought that was disrespectful.
Castle is recently retired from heading up the Fairbanks Borough Parks and Recreation Department and has served leadership roles in a number of local trails and sports organizations. He says his listening and consensus-building experience outside politics would be a plus in Juneau.
What really got me involved here was believing that our current legislator is not representing our district. He votes his mind, which I understand the concept of doing that, but his interests don't necessarily correspond with the diversity that's in District 7.
Castle says public servants sometimes need to push their personal views aside to fairly represent constituents. Castle offers a fresh voice and perspective, while Kelly boasts a record of accomplishment on tough issues, including oil tax reform and overhaul of the state employee retirement system. Kelly and Castle agree that a range of energy infrastructure projects are needed to bridge the state to future mega projects like a North Slope gas pipeline or Susitna Power Dam. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
A one-term incumbent is facing a serious challenge in one of Juneau's two legislative races. Democrat Andrea Dahl is defending her Mendenhall Valley-based District 4 House seat against Republican Kathy Munoz. The district has gone Republican for the past two decades, with Dahl being one of two exceptions. Issues include jobs, transportation, and who can best defend Juneau against a capital move. We have back-to-back reports on the race, Matt Miller on the Dahl campaign, and Weld Royal covering the Munoz effort.
How about Nugget and Steep and Valley Boulevard? Valley Boulevard we did.
Yes.
But Canyon Drive and Granite?
No.
Volunteers for Andrea Dahl's campaign run a highlighting marker over a street map that they've just pulled down from the wall.
Yeah, we good. Three signs on there now.
Dahl, who did not face an opponent in this year's Democratic primary, is trying to win a second term in the House for District 4. The key is connecting with roughly 600 undecided voters in the Mendenhall Valley and northern half of the Juneau Borough. They could be important swing voters for a Democratic candidate in a traditionally conservative district.
The last thing that Juneau needs is another Republican. And what we truly do need is more Democrats in there, that if we do not actually have a majority, at least we have a good balance and that we can start building a coalition that's going to look at the needs across the state.
Pressing issues, according to Dahl, include revamping a public employee and teacher retirement systems and updating antiquated state employee hiring policies.
I strongly think that we need to get more money into our social services. And departments are really having a hard time right now. There's a lot of vacancies. Morale is bad. People are leaving. They can't find people to move in. It's like, who's watching the farm?
Kathy Munoz and campaign volunteer Kendra Kloster are knocking on doors along Meander Way in the Mendenhall Valley. Munoz walks up to one with a moving van in front.
Hello. Oh,
hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Kathy Munoz.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
Ooh.
Oh, you got a nice warm hand.
Munoz says some people are moving away because they can't find good jobs, and that's contributing to Juneau's residential real estate slump.
People are really concerned about the values of their homes. They're concerned about the situation with the Kensington mine and the difficulty the mine's had in getting permitted and going.
The candidate says bolstering Juneau's economy means supporting the regional mining industry. Mine owner Coeur d'Alene recently eliminated half its staff at its Kensington mine north of Juneau. She says Juneau needs a leader in the state legislature who will stand up for mining interests. She says capital projects mean good-paying construction jobs, and the community would obtain more money if a Republican held the House District 4 seat.
It's important to have a bipartisan effort representing Juneau because currently all of our representation is in the minority. And it's difficult because when you come down to dividing up the resources, Juno often gets very little.
Munoz argues that would change if she had a voice in the Republican majority. But with 40 House seats open across the state, there's no guarantee that the Republicans will end up with a majority after Election Day. In Juno, I'm Weld Royal.
Ashley Reed says it was never his intention to conceal his client list or his lobbying activities. One of the legislature's most influential lobbyists pled guilty in Juno District Court this morning to 7 charges stemming from filing late reports with the state. Reed says much of the information in the tardy quarterly or monthly reports was already disclosed during initial registration statements.
Through being busy with other endeavors and inattentiveness together, I filed late, and I guess with the assumption and knowledge that I would always pay a $10 fine. Obviously, if I would have realized that this was the case, I would never have been delinquent or tardy in that category because, you know, this has been a very humbling experience.
Assistant Attorney General Pat Gullifson says there is no evidence that Reed tried to hide anything. Instead, the charges simply stemmed out of the Alaska Public Offices Commission's continued frustration with Reed's chronically late filings.
There is a need to file these reports in a timely manner so that people can look at them in a timely manner, whether or not they duplicate other material or not. People need to know that they do or they don't.
A jail term of 5 days will be suspended and Reed's conviction will be set aside as long as he follows through with a year-long probation. He must personally attend a state lobbyist ethics and compliance training program and complete 120 hours of community work service before next September. Reed will also pay more than $4,800 in additional fines. That's the difference between the $7,000 maximum and the $2,200 in daily fines he already paid to the Alaska Public Offices Commission. Reed last year made more than $450,000 by representing Cook Inlet Regional Native Corporation, NSTAR, GCI, Pepsi-Cola, the North Slope Borough, and Wells Fargo before lawmakers. Reed says he fully intends to be on time with his reports in the future. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org. We had reports tonight from Len Anderson in Anchorage, Ellen Lockyer in the Mat-Su Valley, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, and Matt Miller and Weld Royal in Juneau. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineers are Gooseberry Peter and Dave Waldron. John Prophet is our webmaster. Our managing editor is Duncan Moon. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, financial pioneers in Alaska nearly a century ago, bringing Alaskans to the next stage. WellsFargo.com, the next stage. And by the Alaska Power Association, representing the interests of 600,000 electric consumers and the utilities that serve them. Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.